This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about paddling in Indiana because last week the Indiana Department of Natural Resources released a new comprehensive interactive map that shows where to access waterways fit for paddling, where to rent canoes, and even current water levels in select locations. It's a big deal for anyone interested in going out on the water. So we thought today we would spend some time with a few representatives from Indiana's paddling community to talk about where to go and how to do it safely. And if you have questions about paddle sports, let us know. Or if you'd like to share why you like to get out on the water, or maybe there's a good Indiana River story in your memory, keep it PG, of course. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana, or call us at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We would love to hear from you today. Joining me are four guests. Brent Saucerman is a board member for the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club. Hi, Brent. And Julie Rhodes is Collective Impact Director of Reconnecting to Our Waterways, or ROW. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Matt.
Jill Hoffman is Executive Director for the White River Alliance. She's joining us by phone. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
And welcome to Dan Valesky, joining us on Skype, co-founder of Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Matt. Glad to be here.
Dan, we'll start with you. The whole impetus for this conversation today, as I said, is this new interactive map from the DNR. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. It's pretty easy to use. It'll work on a mobile device, which is important if you're out driving around. It shows access sites for all of the good paddling rivers, most of the good paddling rivers in Indiana. I can, right now I've got it up on my screen. I'm looking at planning a trip this weekend on the Driftwood, and I can see that I've got a choice of about four put-ins, depending how long of a trip I want. It tells me how to find the put-ins, tells me if there's a dam nearby, information that I need to have a good paddle trip.
Yeah, and so on those dams, we've talked about the Lowhead dams on this show before. What kind of a hazard is that? I've been paddling before, and I've never encountered one. What can happen?
What happens is the water comes over the top, speeds up, and as it hits, comes down 3, 4, or 5 feet, hits the bottom, and it rolls. The water rolls back in. The top water kind of comes back into the new water that's coming down the dam. It traps a boat or a body, occasionally a deer, logs, things like that. You can't necessarily swim out of it. It's a much stronger current than you would ever believe possible from even a small river. It doesn't have to be a big river to have a really bad Lowhead dam.
Safety is going to be a big part of the conversation that we're going to have today, and we'll definitely address some more issues with Lowhead dams. But, Dan, I understand that this is something, the map that the DNR just put out. I mean, it's something that your organization, the Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance, has been hoping for a long time, right?
Well, yes. This organization is fairly new, but I think all paddlers in Indiana have been hoping for a good guide for a long time. The last good guide we had was printed by DNR, I think, in the mid-80s, and things change. Access changes. And it was a lot of what you would learn about where to paddle had to be word of mouth. There were no other good sources. It was very tough to figure out where to go. People know that I paddle, and I've paddled for years, so I get calls often or an email, you know, where can we go this weekend? Or what do you know about Deer Creek? That sort of thing. Now people have a way to figure it out for themselves.
Would you say that this new map is pretty complete? You said it contains most of the best spots. And are the ones that it left out, I don't know, would you say that there's a reason, perhaps?
It's the DNR effort. So the first things they put on are rivers that have DNR-maintained access sites. But they're more than willing to update and upgrade, and they've already made some changes just in the past week. I just got an email a little while ago from DNR that said they've had 20,000 hits already since that map has come out, and they are very open to adding anything they missed, looking at different river runs. They're going to add in more mileage information. Some of the small rivers right now don't have mileage information showing. They're going to work on adding all of that. I think DNR has been really pleasantly surprised at how popular it's been so far.
So they're going to keep at it. That's great. So, Dan, can you tell us a little bit more about the Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance?
Well, it's a new group. We're still trying to get our feet under us. It has been apparent for a number of years that there's no one statewide organization in Indiana to bring different groups together. This isn't the kind of group that an individual might want to join, although you're welcome and you're welcome to see what's going on. But we felt like there was a need for information about access, like we've got now with the DNR site. There's also a need for a calendar to paddle groups need to figure out when other paddle groups have big events and to help promote events between paddle groups. For example, Indiana Paddlers Rendezvous is coming up in early August. They would like for the Hoosier Canoe Club to promote it, and they would like for the other groups around the state to promote it. Northeast Indiana Paddle Sports Association, Northwest Indiana Paddling Association will also promote it, and they'll be able to see early on a calendar once we get the calendar a little more functional.
Julie, let's get some more introductions going. What is ROW?
So Reconnecting to Our Waterways, or ROW, is a collective impact group. We have just dozens of participants that make up our local communities that are living around waterways, that make up groups like Jill's at White River Alliance, and also community leaders. And we're all working to advance just connection to our waterways throughout Marion County. And we do that in a variety of ways, but a lot of it is around access towards care of our waterways, and trying to improve water quality through programs and projects, and also access is a big part of that, trying to get more people waterside and on our waterways.
We just heard from Dan, Julie, about the Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance, and he talked about how it's not really an organization people would necessarily join. It's kind of an organization that stands sort of as a place for all of the other groups to gather. What, I guess, do you mean by collective impact? I'm assuming that that's part of what you mean, but if I'm wrong, then clear it up.
So we are not a membership organization, but we definitely rely very heavily on volunteers across the community, whether that's folks that are working professionally in water-related work or economic development, community development, but also trying to connect those folks and their resources on the grounds with the communities that have ideas for how they want to improve and activate their waterways. So that can be the nonprofits that are working boots on the ground, but that can also be just individual community members that live along the White River, along the five tributaries of, you know, Pokes Run, Pleasant Run, Fall Creek, Little Eagle Creek, and Central Canal. So we're working more on the resource side, but that human power that drives these projects on the community level is something that we're always looking to add to, getting more voices heard, and then trying to work to bring those resources to bear to make those projects happen.
Brent Sosserman, you're on the board for the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club. Can you tell me about the club? Oh, can't hear you, Brent. Brent is talking. Jill, we'll skip over to you. Brent will come right back to you. Jill, can you tell us about the White River Alliance and what you do?
Sure, I can. Thanks for having us on the show. I really appreciate it. We are a nonprofit organization focused in central Indiana, but as you know, it's kind of flat here in the center part of the state, so the watershed or the basin that drains to the White River is pretty large. So we do work to try to protect and improve the water resources in that watershed of the Upper White, and that's about 16 parts of 16 counties. So we cover quite a bit of ground with our work and work with all different kinds of stakeholder groups. So our cities and towns, our university researchers, our corporations and consultants, kind of everybody pulling together, trying to figure out the best policies and practices and projects and education that can help improve the quality and quantity of what's in the White River.
All right. Brent, do we have you back? Still having trouble with Brent. Dan, we'll move on to you. You've been paddling in Indiana and elsewhere for a long time. Would you say you're pretty familiar with a lot of the locations on this new DNR map?
Oh, yeah, I think, yes, I think I've paddled most of the good stuff. There are some smaller streams I've missed. There's a couple I still have on my bucket list, but I've seen most, yes. Yeah.
Would you say that Indiana is a good or a great state for canoeing and kayaking?
Well, it's good. It's a good state. I don't know about great. It's not Idaho. It's not Maine, not Minnesota. But considering, you know, where we live and where we all work, yeah, we're lucky to have the rivers we have. There's a great
What do places like Idaho and Maine and Minnesota have that we don't?
Mountains and real wilderness. Mountains bring white water. We're a little limited on white water. Indiana's a little bit flat, although there are a few places you can find some genuine white water in Indiana after a good rainstorm. Occasionally, something will come up.
Jill, when we use our rivers and streams for recreation, I mean, we hope that it'll make people appreciate them. And I think largely that's what happens. But there are challenges there, I guess. What are some of them?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I grew up in Wisconsin. And so when I think back about all of my childhood experiences and what even drove me into this career, it was, you know, kind of growing up on the shores of Lake Michigan and jumping around in wetland bogs and that kind of stuff. And it was just everybody I knew had a lake house, and your grandparents had somewhere to, you know, retreat to, or wherever you would have your family, you know, kind of get togethers was always tied around water. So it builds this ethic or passion for protecting it. And I think what's happened here in Indiana is, you know, a lot of our economy and, you know, values and family experiences have not happened as much on the water, more so because I think the waterways have been seen kind of as a conduit for, you know, draining agriculture or using inside of industry. And so a lot of folks don't have that same connection, but it's actually super easy to cultivate because, you know, as we just heard, there's a lot of great waves and a lot of great waters to get on. So if we can kind of shift to that and get people out there, I really believe they'll become super interested in protecting the quality of those water resources.
And we're talking about canoeing and kayaking in Indiana today, and we will be back after a quick break. If you have questions or comments, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about paddling in Indiana with Brent Saucerman, a board member for the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club. Julie Rhodes is Collective Impact Director of Reconnecting to Our Waterways, or ROW. Jill Hoffman is Executive Director for the White River Alliance. And Dan Valesky is co-founder of Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance. This is such a fun topic, so we would love your input today. We'd like to know your favorite spots for canoeing and kayaking in Indiana and why. Or if you have a good story about being on the water in Indiana and how it made you feel, we would love to hear it. Of course, we can take questions for our panel as well. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. And Jill, just before we went to break, I made the mistake of not telling you how much time we had left, so I rudely interrupted you. But we were talking about our use of the waterways in ways like paddling and the kinds of challenges in balancing people being on the water and using the water and our impact on the water. And Jill, feel free to pick up where you left off there.
Sure. I was just talking a little bit about, you know, the values and sort of heritage we might have or have not tied to these waterways in the past for recreation. So it's just, I think this topic is a great way to get people to understand that we have an asset in our water resources that can be viewed for, you know, fun and rejuvenation and all these great experiences, in addition to the ways that we've historically used these resources for, you know, either draining our agricultural or industry or, you know, helping with provide electricity. So there's a lot of ways we've used our water for our day to day. And now I think we're really encouraging people to start to use the water for in a different day-to-day way, more about respite and recreation, but they have to understand the connection between what happens in the landscape around ends up in the water. So if we want that opportunity, we need to caretake these resources.
And so part of that awareness, I guess, of that very fact, I guess, it comes from being on the water, I guess. Would you say that that more paddlers might mean more awareness of these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nearly impossible to be out there and not kind of recognize what's right around you, which could include really beautiful and surprising things like incredible nature, but also some things that might surprise you, like, you know, pipes that are putting discharge and pollution into the water, or agriculture that's run right up to the edge of the water. And so, you know, then you become more aware of thinking about how is all of this stuff connected. And that's a really a good awakening for people to kind of see how it all fits together and then think about protecting it.
All right. Brent Saucerman, do we have you now? We've had some technical problems, and it's our apologies.
I hope so. Can you hear me now?
Brent, I got you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got it worked out. Brent, I'm so glad you're on our panel today. Can you tell us about the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club?
Yeah, the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club was founded as the Hoosier Canoe Club back in the 60s. It was by a group of people that were interested in canoeing. And then in the early 70s, folks who were actually building some of the first kayaks out of fiberglass and other materials. It's a great way to meet other paddlers and learn the sport with help of more experienced paddlers. It costs about $20 per family per year, so it's a very low cost. We offer a lot of free or very reduced rate training. That includes intro and intermediate classes in canoeing and kayaking. And normally those would cost you $150 to $350 per class. For members, most of those classes are free. Some of our rescue courses do have a small fee that's associated with that. We have different fleets for different types of paddling. We have whitewater fleet. We have the canoe and kayak fleet that probably a lot of listeners would be interested in, which is more flat water or calm water paddling. And then we also have our sea kayak fleet for folks who like to get out and go up to the Apostle Islands, go out to Maine, down to South Carolina, and they get out and about and do some more adventurous camping trips. We have a lot of organized monthly trips that are sponsored by knowledgeable paddlers, and that way you can get out and experience different Indiana streams, and you don't have to put as much thought into the planning and execution. We think clubs are one of the safest, most economical ways to learn to paddle. And I think the other important piece of what we do kind of ties in with what other panel members have said, and that's that stewardship and service are very important in the paddling community. We do a lot of stream cleanups, as do other clubs in the state. You know, we always like to consider or ask folks to paddle in and carry trash out. So pick up what you can on the way to help keep our streams cleaner than they are now. And we do a lot of cleanups. We do some at Eagle Creek. We do Raccoon Creek before the Covered Bridge Festival as a club. And then I know Northwest Indiana Paddling Association has done a lot of work on the Little Calumet River. That was somewhere you probably wouldn't have paddled 20 years ago. But with their work and with some work from the state, that's a much cleaner stream now.
Brent, I think a lot of people, myself included, I'll admit it, think that they can just go and do something simple like paddling, or seemingly simple, I guess, without much training or experience. I mean, I've been out, I've rented canoes, and there's not much training that goes along with an experience like that. But then again, it's usually an easy river or stream where that takes place. Maybe someone has a boat and they think they have a plan and that's enough. What's your pitch, I guess, for organized paddling and the focus on safety?
Yeah, I'm an American Canoe Association level 1 and 2 instructor in both canoe and kayak on stream specific or river specifically for kayak and river and touring in the canoe. So I don't instruct for hire. I work with the club. I work with the Voyager Canoe Training Program with the local Boy Scout Council. We all think, and I think most folks that paddle and that are active paddlers will agree that if you're new to the sport, it really helps to get some form of training. It will make it much less frustrating, especially if you're in a tandem canoe and you're fighting with the other individual in the boat to control that boat. It's also much safer. There's so many things that you don't know when you begin paddling that are a hazard to you and to those you're paddling with. So we just really urge people to get some form of training, whether that's a formal class or going out with somebody that you know that's a responsible and experienced paddler.
What would you say are some examples of that for someone not who's a complete noob, I guess, but for someone who has maybe, I don't know, rented a boat on Sugar Creek or Whitewater down in the southeastern part of the state or maybe the Blue? Doesn't matter. For someone who has done that and not gotten this big safety talk beforehand, like a lot of liveries tend to leave off, what do you think they should know?
So some of the big things that we talk about, obviously PFDs or life vests, some people call them buoyancy aids. I will say that most paddlers should wear those all of the time. There are certainly certain instances where that's an encumbrance, but really for paddling, it's important. 80% of paddling fatalities, I think in 2016 or 17, were actually not wearing a PFD. In some cases, that might not have saved their life, but certainly in a large portion of those, that would have helped save their life or at least made things easier for rescuers and search teams. In Indiana and across the United States, I believe, children 12 and under must wear a PFD by law. Everybody else must have one on board for all passengers. You should keep in mind that that was designed for larger commercial vessels or pleasure boats. When you're in a canoe or kayak, they're generally inherently unstable, and you usually do not have a chance to put one on before the boat capsizes. Once you're in the water, it's virtually impossible to put one on. So we just ask people to get a U.S. Coast Guard approved, properly fitted, and comfortable PFD. Make sure it's fitted properly, and there's certainly a number of videos online where you can learn to do that. We stress this isn't just a personal decision. You're putting potential rescuers and search crews at risk, people who may not have the experience to conduct a rescue and may harm themselves. So it's not just a personal decision. And, you know, your family and friends have to deal with the aftermath if you aren't wearing a PFD and you drown or are seriously injured. Some other things that we talk about safety-wise as instructors and as paddlers, there's safety in numbers. It's good to go out with at least 3 boats if you can. That way you have a boat to help rescue and a boat to go for help. More is better. Certainly there are people that paddle alone. You just have to take additional precautions there if you do that. Carry your 10 essentials, and you can look those up online. I won't go into those, but basically food, water, first aid kit, those types of things. A common thing is for people not to think to bring enough water, so dehydration is an issue. If you can, file a float plan or notify a responsible party of your location and the time you should be getting off the water. If you don't call that individual when you get off the water, they should then try to call you, and if they can't reach you, they should then go ahead and contact local authorities. And that just gets a potential search and rescue going if you need it. I like to say, know your boat and gear. What type of water is your boat appropriate for? Is it appropriate for a pond, whitewater, or the ocean? And know how to control the boat and practice using any gear you take with you frequently. Know yourself, and this is probably the most important thing right now. Know what your skills are. Know what your fitness level is. What training do you have specific to the type of paddling you want to do that day? And then know the body of the water. We've talked about low head dams. Strainers are very common in Indiana and around the U.S. Basically, they're trees that have fallen into the water. Water can pass easily through, but the force of the water will push a paddler or a boat into a strainer, and that traps you there and can trap you underwater. We actually had, I think, a 12 or 13-year-old girl down in Tennessee that passed away about 3 weeks ago from being trapped in a strainer. And I don't want to wax poetic, but low head dams we've talked about, they look idyllic, but they are referred to as drowning machines. Danny talked about that recirculating hydraulic. They sometimes refer to it as a washing machine action, and it just traps you against the dam. So that's something to be aware of. There are other river hazards. Always dress for immersion. A lot of people will dress for the air temperature. Maybe 80 degrees out, but that water may be 60 degrees or 50 degrees, depending on where you're paddling. And if you go into the water, you need to be prepared for that. Never paddle impaired. That probably shouldn't need to be said, but we do see that a lot, especially on livery rivers. There are a lot of folks that go out and like to rent a boat and maybe get a little bit more inebriated than they should. Mm. Water and paddling and alcohol or drugs really do not mix. It's best to kind of imbibe after you get to the takeout, and you have a safe ride home. And then I just say, you know, be cautious about which online sources of videos and information you go to. Online, there's a lot of great information. There's also information that may not be from knowledgeable sources. And I definitely recommend not getting a lot of advice off of Facebook. Go to more reputable sources with videos and you know, just more reputable source information.
Let's see. We are talking about paddling today on All In, and we welcome your input, and we've got quite a bit of it to get through, I'm happy to say. We have a listener voicemail now from John, who gave us a call at 866-476-3881. John has a question. Let's listen.
This is John from Goshen, Indiana. I'm interested in how much the vegetation at the side of the rivers is important to paddlers, both in terms of the enjoyment of the paddling and in terms of the health of the river. Thank you.
That sounds like a Jill question. Jill, what can we know, I guess, by looking at what's growing on the banks?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love when people think bigger than just the water that they're on. We want to see all of our streams buffered in some way. So whether that vegetation is woods and trees, or it's, you know, wildflowers and grasses, really any and all of that works to help filter pollution before it enters the water. As far as like the experience, though, I mean, our woodland buffers give us some nice shade when we're paddling. So a lot of us appreciate when we can float in under some of that stuff on our trip. But the grasslands and wildflowers can bring about, you know, lots of bird watching and pollinators and things like that. So I guess when we're thinking about stream health, we want a stream that has kind of a mix of all those habitats. But we definitely want a stream that has some kind of vegetated buffer. It's good for both water quality and the experience.
We have another listener voicemail. This one's from Nick. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, this is Nick from Indianapolis. I used to work for the U.S. Geological Survey here in Indianapolis, and I was hoping that you and the host could talk a little bit about the role of monitoring our public waters and the agencies that do it.
Dan, the USGS has a number of gauges that where we can get real-time information, right?
Right, they do. You can get those through the paddle app. They've been up for a long time. They're invaluable to paddlers. I look at that weekly. I paddle often in Fall Creek because I'm in Indy. I think probably three or four times a week I'm looking at the levels in Fall Creek. Find the link. You can get the link through the Hoosier Canoe Club website or a few other places. I can put it on the on your Facebook page as well. The only trick with the levels is knowing what they mean. Sometimes it's just a number and it doesn't have a reference to tell you what it means. You might see a gauge that says there's 6 feet of water, and a couple of days later there might be 8 feet of water. Well, you have to understand that different rivers can tolerate different levels. It doesn't always help a paddler right away. Look at those over a period of time and they become a lot more valuable to you. Or ask somebody what's a good level on a certain river. But yeah, we really like the USGS. Thank you guys. That's great. They're great.
And Dan, I guess it seems like it's a case by case thing, but if we were to look at water levels and I don't know, what's too low? What's too high? It seems like certain rivers will have different answers for those questions.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's a number, and it doesn't always have meaning. And that's why you want to look over a period of time. If you think you've got a trip coming up in a couple of weeks on a certain river, start looking at the levels right away. And look at the weather, too. If it's going to rain a lot, well, it's probably going to come up. But different levels mean different things. Fall Creek, you can paddle pretty comfortably with 70 cubic feet per second of flow, whereas if the White River only has 70 cubic feet of flow, there's something wrong. It's not going to be much fun. That's really low for a big river like the White. The depth numbers are even a little more vague. It has to do with where the gauge is aiming down at the bottom of the river, I think. So study it, ask around if you need to learn what the numbers mean.
Brent, we have a question here from Matt on Facebook who asks, how do you get back to your car if you go into one of these launch sites?
So there are a number of really cool ways to do this. The most common, and it's a little bit problematic with COVID right now due to social distancing, but the most common is to run a shuttle. You ideally need at least two cars for this. And what we'll generally do is go drop the boats and gear at the put-in. And then we will run a shuttle. Danny and I actually did this on Eagle Creek a few weeks back. You take the drivers and drop most of the cars back at the put in, or down at the put in. You drive back with enough vehicles to take all the folks that are paddling back up to the put in, and then you paddle down, retrieve the cars, load the gear, and then usually one person will take the one or two drivers back to their vehicle at the put in. There are also some people, I know one person with our club, who will pack his boat on his kayak, or his bicycle, I'm sorry, on his kayak, and will actually strap it to the top, paddle down, and then drive back to his vehicle on his bicycle. Some people will Uber, drop the boat and leave their vehicle, paddle down river, and then call an Uber, secure their boat at the takeout, and then they will take the Uber back to their vehicle, drive back and pick up their gear. So there are a number of ways to accomplish that. Some people also, if you're on a livery creek or river, you can pay liveries if you have your own boat, and usually it's a $10 to $30 fee, and they will shuttle you on one of their trailers.
We're talking about paddling, canoeing, kayaking, rafting in Indiana, and when we come back, we'll talk about some more of the great spots in our state for getting on the water, and we would love to hear about your favorites as well. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking about paddling today on Indiana's waterways. And we are talking about it because the Indiana Department of Natural Resources just released a new interactive map with public access locations, canoe rental businesses, and real-time water levels. We have a great panel with us today. Brent Sossaman is a board member for the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club. Jill Hoffman is executive director for the White River Alliance. Dan Valesky is co-founder of Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance. And Julie Rhodes is collective impact director of Reconnecting to Our Waterways, or ROW. And Julie, we're going to start with you in this segment. We've been talking about hazards. We've been talking about safety hazards like low head dams. But another hazard that we need to talk about, and don't worry, I'll definitely bring Jill into this part of the conversation as well, and that's water quality. Julie, there are some places where you can paddle, but you wouldn't want to get the water on your skin, much less take a dip in it. What places are on that list and why?
So one of the things that we've been really trying to work with our communities on is that concern, especially around the combined sewer overflows and those outfall points. And I think that even though the DNR's map is a really great statewide map, I also want to put a little bit of a plug in for the Friends of the White River. We recently partnered with them and Hamilton County Tourism to look at where some of those outfall points are, in addition to where access is, what the water level information is, and also be able to see where some of those natural and cultural sites are, especially between Hamilton and Marion County. But that map actually goes between Muncie and Petersburg. And that's an app that you can download and sort of have that information at your fingertips. But as we're trying to help folks think about getting into the water, that raw sewage that has historically been in those mostly our marginalized neighborhoods within Marion County, we really want to make sure people aren't just jumping in and going for a swim, and trying to help educate them on limiting that body contact in our waterways. That doesn't mean that you can't paddle and that you can't access, but making sure you're not getting water in your mouth or nose or eyes or ears, and that you wash off pretty quickly after you have that exposure. We do think there's a lot of opportunities for, you know, creek stomping and things like that, as long as you're taking precautions and then getting on the water. We do a lot of that work with Friends of the White River to get communities, especially our communities of color, on the waterways so that they can have those experiences, because they have been a group that have been historically not had access to the very waterways that they've lived beside because of industrial ways, CSOs, and other pollution.
One of the things that ROW, your organization, focuses on are those neighborhoods that the waterways flow through. How, I guess, do the rivers and streams and the fact that they're there, I guess, impact the people that live there? And I want the good and the bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of good work right now happening. You know, Jill talked a lot about that vegetation along the waterway and how important that is. And a lot of our communities are removing the invasive species, planting native species, and really trying to reduce the erosion along our waterways. But we also know that access is really important, and you can't care for what you can't see. So we've seen a lot of really exciting projects along Fall Creek, Central Canal, and most recently along White River, where we're opening up those view sheds and really helping people appreciate that waterway that's nearby. And that gives us sort of that entryway into those discussions about how to safely get on the water, where to access the water. We worked with our White River Committee recently, White River State Park and White River Alliance, on stabilizing some area below the New York Street Dam, really improving areas and opening up the view sheds around that space in downtown Indianapolis that had long been covered by invasive species. And also ADA accessibility is a critical component of accessibility to our waterways for paddling or otherwise. And so we reinforced a path along that space near the New York Street Bridge so that there's more ADA accessibility. Similarly, we worked with the Indiana Wildlife Federation as part of their Sustainable Trails program to refurbish a path to the White River at Holiday Park that had sort of been in disrepair and was no longer accessible to wheelchairs and others. So it's a lot goes into this ability to be able to paddle and to open that up to more folks within our community.
Jill, you're the executive director of the White River Alliance, but you're also a biologist with a focus on water quality. And so obviously, I guess some of the areas Julie's talking about are, I mean, they're heavily populated. So I don't know, one might think that that's just a given, that those rivers and streams are going to be more polluted because more people live there. But is that, would you say, an excuse? Are there things we can do to mitigate that?
Yeah, certainly there are things we can do. This isn't rocket science. It's just some simple ecology. And so what we want to try to do is prevent nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen, which is sort of tied up in any kind of organic matter. And then things like bacteria, which those things tend to go hand in hand. So when you're in an urban area, things we like to talk to people about are like, you know, picking up after your pets, also not feeding waterfowl on the edges of the banks, right, and encouraging them and their waste in the water. Try to talk to people about lawn fertilizer use, because what happens is when you get out there paddling, you'll see all these pipes come in, and those are just storm pipes coming from our neighborhoods, and they're carrying, no matter where you are in the state, they're carrying the same sort of cocktail of pollution that's common in your urban and suburban yards. So that stuff comes in without any treatment, so it's a direct conduit in those pipes. So we want to try to live a little lighter around our homes, and then the waters that we paddle will be cleaner. We like to encourage native planting, landscaping with native plants to kind of help get some of that groundwater and runoff pushed back into the ground before it even gets to the pipe. So all of those things. But then, of course, we have a lot of our rural areas that have agriculture and different industry contributing as well. So it is quite a mixture of things out there, and there are best practices that we know exactly what to do with each of those stakeholders to encourage pollution reduction. So we're happy to talk with anybody that's along a waterway or a ditch or river or a lake about things they can do. We can all play a part.
We're talking about paddling in Indiana today, and Dan Valesky is with us. Dan, how much do you have to think about the quality of water when you're out?
Depends where I am. I probably use a little hand sanitizer before I stop and eat lunch. Depending where I'm paddling, I might take a shower when I get home. I'm not as worried about it as some people. I think I might have a little bit of immunity just because I've been in water
years
so
of
many
experience.
Times. You hate to see it, and you don't always know when you see water trickling in where it's coming from. Very often it's not good, but occasionally it's been treated if you paddle the White River from Hazel Dell down into Indianapolis, you'll pass the Carmel Water Treatment Plant. Scientists tell us that the water coming out of there is supposed to be pretty good by the time they treat it and put it back into the river. I hope they're right. It's not fun seeing the soap bubbles come through, but at least it's been treated. The bigger problem is what happens right after a rainstorm, the combined sewage overflow. When it rains, the street sewer system tends to overload the sanitary sewer system. They're basically one and the same. It all gets treated on a normal day, but on a rainy day, they can't treat it all. So some of it gets dumped back into the river. And that's the purpose of the big tunnel under Indy, to have a reservoir so that they can hold it for treatment later.
I wish we could talk about the big dig today, but there's so much more I want to talk about before the end of the hour. If you want to know more about the big dig or the Dig Indy project, you can find that. And I believe we've done a couple of shows on it. But I want to talk now about favorite places in the last 10 or so minutes that we have. Brent, let's say the weather is perfect statewide and you've got all day. Where are you going? What are your top choices and why?
I think there are a few places. One is just outside the state. I really like Yellowwood State Forest. I like to jokingly say I was born in a Grumman. We camped a lot when I was a kid. And that was one of the first places I remember paddling. And just a small little lake down there. There's camping. We really like Chain of Lakes State Park. About 10 years ago, we went up there. There are a chain of, I think, 6 or 8 lakes. And you can paddle from lake to lake. There's actually... the state has a challenge right now. If you paddle and take the photos that they ask you to take, you can actually buy a T-shirt to say you've done it. That might be a great thing to do with kids. That's a great place to paddle with kids. We have we do a lot of family paddling. And then in the third, this time of year in Indiana, when it's normally a whole lot of dry stream beds, we like to run over to the Mad River north of Dayton, Ohio. It's spring-fed. So it runs probably 57 to 60 degrees on a, 95 degree August day. And the unless there's been a lot of rain, the stream level is pretty constant. So it usually doesn't dry up.
I love that you mentioned Yellowwood. I was just there on Sunday. It's one of my favorite places in the state. Julie, what about you? I know your focus is central Indiana primarily, and feel free to keep it there if you'd like. But where are your favorite waterways for paddling and why? Julie, are you there?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so next week I'm actually heading up to Leland, Michigan, and we'll be doing some kayaking on Lake Michigan and Lake Leelanau. But I don't frequently have a lot of time to sneak away to get on water. And so I really, really value the fact that we have this White River. I live downtown Indianapolis, and being able to sneak away for a few hours to put in at the Indianapolis Arts Center. They've just done some cool new improvements there at that city access point. Taking that down to Riverside Park at Lake Indy, or even on down to downtown Indianapolis. I mean, there's no better way to sort of feel away from it all right in the smack dab middle of the city than to just be doing that little trip. Just a few hours, and you can see all kinds of wildlife. I mean, I've seen Baltimore Orioles and lots of heron and cranes and turtles and just things like that that make you feel like that you are far removed from the day-to-day stresses of the city. So I really appreciate those opportunities.
All right. I appreciate that. Jill, your turn. Where are you going if you've got all day and the conditions are perfect?
Well, I'm going to let Julie has done a great job of speaking to urban paddling in the White in the city. But I have a soft spot in my heart because I have a place up north near LaGrange for the Pigeon River. And the DNR owns a ton of property along the Pigeon River. So that fish and wildlife area, I'm telling you, you can get out there. You can see state listed endangered turtles, and you can just feel like you're in this incredible complex of wetlands that doesn't exist in much of our state anymore. So that's a smaller stream. So it's windy and wooded at its headwater area. And that makes for some fun, curves and paddling maneuvers. But it's just a really fun atmosphere. There's a couple of liveries up by Mongo. So you can, if you don't have your own equipment, there's a lot of good opportunity to get in there. there's just osprey nesting everywhere. And like I said, that landscape up there is still a lot of public lands and protected, and that really can bring about a unique experience both on the water and in the skies.
I want to make sure we give Dan the last word on places to go. But Jill, while I have you, since you're a biologist with a focus on water quality, is it kind of hard sometimes to separate work from play when you're out on the water?
Yeah, it is. But I feel a responsibility and a passion to have a voice about it, because, you know, these experiences are, you know, what make us both human and connect that humanity to nature. So, you know, when I'm paddling and I see those inputs or I see land use challenges, you know, I use my voice to talk about those things and make this place better. So I think, you know, paddling with the knowledge is both dangerous but inspiring. And, you know, I just really encourage people to learn about the way the landscape connects to our water, so that when they're out there, they can be thinking about those things and making change themselves when they get off the water.
All right, Dan, I want your top paddling spots, but I also want to know what you think maybe Brent, Julie, and Jill left out.
Yeah, they hit the good ones. The ladies hit my two favorites, Pigeon and the White. The only thing that I would say about the White River, yes, I like it in Indy, and I've paddled it 50 or 100 times, but don't overlook the White River up by Anderson or Daleville. Yorktown to Daleville is very pretty on the White River when there's enough water in it. Really nice place. The Pigeon River is fun, and if you want to go up for a weekend, spend one day on the Pigeon River and then spend the next day on the Fawn. The Fawn River runs roughly parallel to the Pigeon River. Or if you're in that part of the state, you can go to Cedar Creek on the north side of Fort Wayne also. They're all pretty. I'll take any one of them. And the Blue in the south part of the state is well worth mentioning. It has had designated wild and scenic, I believe, for many years. I think it was one of the first to be designated such as a wild and scenic river. And the Blue is pretty. Access can be a little bit tricky, but if you're renting, access isn't a problem.
Brent, let's talk about events that people can attend to learn more or to get on the water. Is there anything coming up?
Yeah, so hop on. We have several classes scheduled for this summer. If you want to hop on the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak website, and if you just do a Google search for Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club, that will come up. You can look at our calendar and find out when those are. Again, it's $20 to join, and then most of those courses are free for members. The other thing I think that Danny mentioned was the Indiana Paddlers Rendezvous. And that's done by the Wildcat, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking, the Wildcat Guardians, which is a great group up near Kokomo. They do a lot of stream cleaning, but they have a great party up there. I've been wanting to go for 4 or 5 years. It just seems I always have to work that weekend. So that's something I would definitely check out if you're interested in paddling in Indiana.
I met my wife there 30 years ago.
How about that? Oh, what a great addition. All right. In our last 30 seconds or so, Jill, the White River Alliance puts on their paddle days every year. What's going on this year?
Yeah, that's something we just started this year, actually, because we are not doing our dragon boat racing this year due to COVID. So the best way to social distance is maybe a 6-foot kayak paddle. So you can check out our website for some free paddle days that we're offering through the White River Canoe Company out of Noblesville.
All right. This has been a great talk. I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. Brent Saucerman is board member for the Hoosier Canoe and Kayak Club. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you.
Julie Rhodes is Collective Impact Director of Reconnecting to Our Waterways, or RO. Thanks for your time, Julie.
Thank you.
Jill Hoffman is Executive Director for the White River Alliance. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Matt.
Dan Valesky is co-founder of Indiana Paddle Sports Alliance. We appreciate it, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. Every episode's also a podcast, which you can find wherever you get podcasts. And tomorrow we will welcome the stars of HGTV's Good Bones, which takes place primarily on the near south side of Indy. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.